Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the March 8 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions out of Watseka, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You can listen to the whole of our programming anytime you'd like on our website at WILLAG.org. Let's start with you this afternoon, Brian Stark, and review some of the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture and what you think the impact might be. I'd like to begin with corn, where USDA added 100 million bushels to the carryover. Instead of 1.73, we're now at 1.83. What difference does that make?
I don't think it makes much difference at this point, Todd. I think the market reacted accordingly. It was much ado about nothing. There has been some talk that they might lower exports, and they did 75 million, trying to be a little more aggressive up front with the slower pace of movement here along the calendar year, marketing year so far. And the trade now is back to what it's been trading, kind of in a grind lower type of environment here while we wait for more concrete information from a potential trade deal and as their eyes point towards the acreage report here at the end of the month.
Was this the largest impact on the marketplace for the week, or was it the president on Friday afternoon, or Friday during the day, Merrill, discussing the trade deal with China?
Well, I think the trade deal with China is definitely the most important. There's so many unknowns about that. I think you got toward the end of the week here, and at least in the corn, I think you see funds maybe taking some profits out of the market for the week that they've sold pretty hard into. Beans seem to be reflecting, from what I read, the likelihood that we're not going to see an agreement by March 27th.
Right. So the president saying, I don't know that we'll have an agreement. Terry Branstad saying, we certainly aren't looking for anything by the end of this month. And I think Larry Kudlow may have been on the air talking about April as a possibility, although I believe he left May open as a possibility as well. Nonetheless,
I think the major concern here is the enforcement of the whole policy. I mean, they come to an agreement, and they've had agreements before. They had agreements in WTO, and they just basically ignore those agreements and do what they want. So I think your biggest issue is the enforcement.
So we're still waiting it out. What does this mean, in your opinion, Dan Zwicker?
Well, I don't know if it makes a lot of difference. I mean, I saw on the wire China's a little nervous working with Trump because they know that he'll walk away and they want to have a signing agreement, because I think the move that he made walking away from the North Korea summit, told China right up front that unless you're really serious about a good agreement, don't even come and talk to me because I'm going to walk away from it. So I think China's got some rethinking to do on how far they want to go and what they're willing to do. So my guess is that everything is probably 30 to 60 days down the road before we come to some kind of resolution to an agreement. But I do believe both parties want to have an agreement, and they want to get it over with. But I think it's just a matter of positioning at this point, and it's maybe going to take an extra 60 days. I mean, it's negative in an aspect is that one thing we do need in this market is demand. But I'm not too sure demand can be large enough at this point to really help anything. Today's report just basically told the world again that the U.S. has plenty of supply. We got plenty of beans, we got a lot of corn, and we got a lot of wheat. And we're getting ready to plant another crop. Now, we can argue about whether or not the corn acres are going to be up or down, or bean acres are going to be up or down. But the bottom line is, unless we have a major weather problem to shorten up our supply, We're going to have larger supplies come next fall. And I think, you know, price levels are just going to grind lower. The only thing that can get in this in the way at the moment right now would be a short crop. Barring a short crop, I think will be. I think this market could be sharply lower by fall.
How much is sharply? That sounds a bit dire.
Well, I think we're going back to pre-ethanol levels. So, you know, go back to the charts, go back to 2005, and look at what kind of price levels we had there. And part of, you know, and the main reason is this is basically kind of a repeat of what happened in the 70s. The 70s, we had lofty prices. We had high profitability on the farm. Land prices rose. Farm machinery sales were strong, blah, blah, blah. But that increased production, tillable acres in South America, it increased tillable acres around the world. So we increased world production with those high prices. And then when the 80s came around, it was the same old story, that world production was growing. U.S. was still producing a big crop. We had a pause in it with the pick program to try to short the market for a year, but that didn't work either because prices continued to move lower into the mid 80s. So I think we're in a very similar situation where we got world production numbers going up. Nobody wants to cut back. Our dollar is going to strengthen. It had a big up day yesterday. So I think we're going to struggle selling inventory into the export market. So I think, you know, over the long pull, we're going to go back to the pre-ethanol price levels, and then we're going to see there. I mean, as long as we have farm programs that encourage production, the name of the game then is for you to try to increase your yield, because you're gonna have to look at gross revenue per acre rather than per bushel acre. So the farmers that are adapting high technology and high fertilization program and pumping out the high end yields are the only ones that are really going to make money in this environment.
Gosh, I was hoping that you were just trying to put a near-term bottom in the market like the last time.
Well, maybe that might do that. Well, we could have a drought starting next week, I guess. But it's all about this year's weather. If we have another big crop, there's nothing that's going to stop this thing from going lower. The only thing that's going to stop it is if we get into a short crop. And we got lucky here a couple years ago when South America had a short crop that ratcheted up U.S. prices higher for a period of time. But now South America is coming back at us with a record crop. And we've had two record crops in a row. So whether or not we're going to get a third one in a row, I don't know. Only Mother Nature's going to know that. But barring any kind of major cutback in production, through weather adversities, we're going to be lower next fall.
Hey, Brian Stark, I want to ask you a question. Based on some of that commentary and some of the things I think that we talked about over at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House related to the number of bushels of corn and soybeans that are still in farmers' hands, what basis levels look like and what your expectations might be going through the next several months.
Well, I think obviously beans are a little tough animal because they're so dependent on China. But I agree with Dan. I think that you need demand in the market. But I mentioned Tuesday that, you know, it may come a little too late for this crop year. So whether you want to argue the carryouts, 900 million, 800 million, 700 million, it's still a lot of beans. And so bean basis in general is probably the biggest risk I see moving forward for growers. Now, on the flip side, up until today, you know, corn carryout was projected at 1.7, which is getting a little tight. as you move forward. And I think there's going to be times in the marketplace, and I mentioned, you know, the spring time frame when the market needs more grain in the pipeline, and those are good opportunities for the grower to take advantage of that. It's not ideal because that's typically when they're planting, but being able to multitask is important because that's when the end user tends to stick their head up, especially if the futures continue to grind lower. And that's one good news, I guess you could take a little silver lining if you're friendly to the market long term in beans. I don't know what I would, for my own personal take, would take to get there, but if the board does continue to grind lower, it should give some strength in not only the corn but and bean basis as you move forward to try and keep the pipeline full. So that's kind of where I would focus on. The bean basis obviously is the biggest risk, in my opinion, both old and new crop, if we produce a normal crop, as Dan alluded to, moving forward. And corn basis might have a little bit more friendliness here long term.
Merrill, do you have plans of actions that producers might be able to put in place for old and or new crop? And pick your poison on this one.
Well, if it's a tough call, for sure. There's a couple things. First of all, look at your total income. If you've got sales on and you're just holding on to a minor or somewhat minor portion of your crop, you can go ahead and price that out with and you still have a pretty good gross income. If you wanted, see if you can pick a bottom here later on and buy some calls to replace those. The other thing, if you're still hanging on to it, I think you ought to replace it somehow on the board because that'll give you a pretty good portion of your money to do other things, pay your bills, whatever, and you still keep your ownership in case something comes through. And that's the same for corn and beans because if you get any rally up here, we should see some sort of, you know, at least a dead cat rally, which could take you up to, say, 360, maybe as high as 380. May corn, you could price it out there. Beans, possibly 920. But that, you know, I don't know where the rally would come from necessarily. I do know that if we get a deal with China, that brings in some demand that we don't have. And, yeah, they do have beans in South America. They do have corn coming on in South America that will compete with us. But that initial spurt would help the market pop, and if you're prepared for it, you can take advantage of it. And then if the two were to occur simultaneously, you could get the demand pop and maybe some weather involved in it. If you look back and you look at what the markets have done after February, where you get the February average, on average from 2013, you've seen the market get 35 cents higher than the February average for corn, and $1.19 more for beans. I don't believe the $1.19 is something in the cards right now, and maybe not even the 35. But you usually get a market that rallies above the February average sometime between now and harvest.
Dan, I'm going to take a look again at the charts. I've been, and any of you can jump in on this, but of course, corn has traded in a range, and let's call it, what, 380 to 425, but mostly 380 to 4 bucks or thereabouts over the last several months, since, what, maybe August of last year. Sometimes we call this consolidation. Dan, I take it you think the breakout will be to the downside on this one as opposed to the upside?
Yeah, right now you'd have to say we're breaking out to the downside. Now that doesn't, you know, that's just an opinion from a technical perspective. The fundamentals are still going to drive it, but the technicals at the moment are telling you, like I kind of mentioned yesterday, that there's plenty of supply around and there's really no government report at the moment anyway that's coming at us that's going to alter that or give us a surprise that we have less inventory around. Now, I granted when you get into stocks reports, anything could happen, but we've gotten our supplies so large now that, you know, 100 million bushel miss here or a couple hundred million bushel miss there doesn't really change the equation a whole lot. It, you know, one thing I think we do have going for us, and I don't want to be, you know, I know I started off here awfully negative, but I'm basically negative because of the supply, and we're getting ready to produce another crop. South America is getting ready to harvest a big crop. And unless something changes that world supply mix, it's going to be very difficult for the prices to go higher. But when you look at the market from a seasonal perspective and you look at it from a statistical point of view, the odds are still very, very high that this market can put together a growing season rally of some kind. Now, whether or not that starts in April or May or June or July, but very rarely do you have a February high. And I think this is what we're looking at right now is a February calendar high. Very rarely do you have a late January or early February that's a calendar year high for the year. So, you know, statistically, I would say we still have the odds on our side that the door is going to open up somewhere in here to give us a good rally to take advantage of. And it could be a combination of things like Merrill talked about it. You know, the China deal, I hope it's not already priced in the market. I'm worried that it may be priced into the market, but we won't know, I guess, until something is announced. But if you could get that to come in, and then you could get, you know, some weather adversities around to get the market concerned about whether or not we're going to get all of the acres planted or what might happen. And the way the funds have been selling into this market and open interest has been increasing. So you've got the funds going to be big shorts. So if you could, something could come along to spook them into a short covering rally type thing, that could be the door that opens up and gives us an opportunity to price old crop and new crop inventory, you know, as we go down the road into the growing season. So I still think statistically, seasonally, the door is still open for better pricing opportunities. But I think those are the ones you got to take advantage of. Whether or not the weather adversities turns into a major weather adversity, nobody knows that. But I would still use, you know, minimum type price contracts. I still want to keep the door open to take advantage of higher prices if this is the weather market that turns into something more serious as we go down the road. So I just basically want to keep putting floors on the market on price rallies and keep the door open, you know, for higher prices.
Hey, Brian Stark, I want to take up something else that was discussed at the All Day Ag Outlook, this idea of convergence, especially, or lack thereof, especially for the soybeans, and what that means about the futures markets and the cash grain market, and whether or not we have actually potentially built in a trade deal with China in the futures market that's not reflected in the cash side.
Yeah, I think we talked about that a little bit on Tuesday with the fact that, you know, basis is having to do a lot of the work, because most of us would agree that given the current fundamentals, that bean prices on the board are probably at least a dollar overvalued. And so that's why you see such large wide spreads in basis today. And at some point in time, you know, if there is a trade deal, and to Dan's point, if it's not baked into the market and the board does rally, you're going to have a bigger struggle with that, given the current fundamental situation. So it's very reminiscent to what we dealt with in the wheat situation back in the mid-2000s into 2010 and 11, 12, where you had white wheat carries, especially out west. And I think ultimately trying to figure out the convergence in beans, given the fact that we've historically never had such a large projected carryout, is kind of a new area the trade's trying to figure out. But the basis has definitely had to do a lot of the legwork, given the fact that, you know, futures are probably overvalued by a dollar or so. So the other thing I'd make a point at too is I agree with Dan. I mean, the funds this early in the game is surprising on the corn side to build a short position. I think they're over 200,000 contracts short now. So it's not going to take much, in my opinion, of some friendly news to hit the market to give them a reason to short cover that would give us an opportunity. And I do also agree with them. I do like the minimum price approach. I think ultimately we want to leave the upside open. Crop insurance is the best place to start from a revenue perspective with a revenue floor in place, and then given the ability for the market to work in our favor if we do get some weather adversity here this growing season.
Merrill, what's the possibility of the grain stocks report that will be released along with the prospective plantings figures on the 29th of this month will offer up quicker usage than expected?
I've been betting on the grain stocks to show some more feed to livestock. We've got this livestock herd that just keeps growing. And some people have been telling me, well, it's DDGs that are offsetting that. We had our second largest export of DDGs in this, let's see, what month of February, I believe it was, we've had for quite a while. And it's not going to China, but it's going to other countries. So if we're still running high exports of DDGs, then the argument that DDGs are going into our livestock doesn't carry weight. So I guess I look for the some sort of decrease in the bushels that are in the grain stocks at some point in time. I may be all wrong on that, but it just I can't understand how you can feed more livestock and use less grain. I realize we're getting better at it, but we've gone through some really cold temperatures out west. That's going to burn up more feed. So I guess I'm looking for the corn stocks to go down. The bean stocks, we have been crushing a lot for meal. So, you know, I guess I look for them to be lower, maybe not enough to really push the market. And while I'm thinking about it, I don't want to leave Dan swaying in the wind. It wasn't, probably the last part of December of last year. We had a lot of people talking about the race to the bottom when we were talking about, and Dan made a really good point, we're not cutting acres back. There's been nothing happened since 2012 to really cut acres back, even though here in the U.S. prices have been really depressed with the dollar value of the where it's been. There have been making good money in Brazil, Argentina, Canada, Russia, Ukraine. And at some point, we have to cut these acres back. And so it's not out of line to see these markets go down. I just want to keep some hope up, and I know hope's not a marketing plan. Technically, when you take Dece off the board, like Dece 18, and you bring Dece 19 on the board, a lot of times there's a gap. Sometimes that gap's higher, sometimes it's lower. Well, this year, the 19 was higher. Now, if you go fill that gap in the first part of the month, you raise the percentage possibility that this market is going to rally later in the month. So I don't want to count out the fact that we've got some hope for this market, and we know what it'll cause it. It has to be weather or a change in demand. And so, you know, that's what we got to look forward to, and that's what we got to work with. In the meantime, because of what Dan was pointing out with these lower prices and what I remember they were talking about having to take production out of use, you're going to have lower prices to do that. So you've got to be able to get a floor in this market, and I agree wholeheartedly when Dan says they got to be some sort of minimum price contract.
Yeah, so we have corn and soybeans combined about 180 million acres generally in use. Do you think we'll have that many again this year? And what kind of acreage, when we see that on the 29th, ratio do you expect? So USDA is at 85 and 93, I think.
Well, we're not seeing a lot of change in anything that we're hearing right now. I think your Midwest area is going to stay pretty much in the rotation. They might go some more corn. Corn is more profitable when you break it down. The problem with the corn is that the amount of money you have to come up with to plant the crop, and you've got anhydrous going up. The beans can make a good return if you can have the yield. The problem is if this price will where it's at now and how it could go down between now and March 30th, that can change a lot of things. The way the crop insurance is right now with the averages suggests, if I was farming, that you'd want more corn with my guarantee.
What do you suspect the acreage numbers will look like when they come out in the prospective plantings report, Brian?
Given the current weather forecast today, and I know weather can change But I agree with Merrill that we don't see a lot of change in the three I states in the central part of the belt. I think any type of additional corn acres comes from your outlying areas, and you look at the snowpack up in the Dakotas. The last few years, we haven't seen as many prevent plant acres. I think that could have some impact where that might grow this year if we don't get off to warmer temperatures and drier scenarios. I think, you know, Eric relayed on Tuesday that he sees warmer temperatures coming, but maybe not necessarily a drier pattern here in the next 30 to 60 days. So to me, I think the government's a little high on the corn acres, unfortunately. And I think I would probably be somewhere personally, you know, maybe 91, maybe 92 and bean acres subsequently adjusting maybe close to a lesser drop than last year. So that's not going to be good for bean prices long term, and I think it does give some support to corn price here down the road too.
On the flip side, I know planters have been rolling for corn in Texas. Do you have some numbers that you're thinking about across the nation, Dan?
Well, the corn-soybean ratio really doesn't favor one or the other. It goes down now to the individual farm. And if your farm does a better job producing corn, you're going to plant a little more corn. If your farm does a better job planting beans, you're going to plant a little more beans. My initial reaction would be that we would have less bean acres and more corn acres. But I don't know if it's going to be as significant as what USDA pumped out on their world forum that they had here a couple of 3 weeks ago. I'm not sure that's going to be that big, but my tendency would be with that we will see more corn acres and less bean acres. And yeah, I got corn about 4 inches tall, about a half a block from my house here down here in the Rio Grande Valley. But most of the corn is just going in, so it's just starting to get germinated. But in the far south here, down along the Mexican border, we do have corn about 4 inches high.
I'd appreciate all three of you being with us for the afternoon. Thanks so much, and we look forward to talking to you on the air again in the near future. Of course, Brian Stark is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Merrill Crowley is with Midwest Market Solutions. He's in Watseka, Illinois. And Dan Zwicker is at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You can hear the whole of our programming anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And one final note, I'd like you to go back and listen to the closing market report, or at least visit the willag.org website and look for an interview that I did with Martin Barbary, who is the RMA, or Risk Management Agency's administrator, about SCO and crop insurance. You'll also want to listen to the current version of an interview I've done with Gary Schnittke. That's from mid-February as it relates to those decisions you're making. And I should have another interview with him on Monday afternoon. So those are all some decision points that producers will be making in the next, by the 15th of this month, so next week. And you want to make sure that you have all that information in mind. And we're trying to get it delivered to you as efficiently as we can. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.